Welcome into DC On Screen episode 414. This is the DCEU news. I am your host, David C. Robertson. This, my co-host, Jason Goss.
Hello.
We have a lot of stuff to talk about this week, kind of. I mean, on the DCEU news side of things. Not really on the DC TV side of things. But we'll talk about that in the next episode. DCEU news. And this is the first thing up. I guess first things up, I should ask you, how was your week, Jason?
Oh, just fine.
We do that from time to time.
Yeah. I have not had particularly eventful weeks.
Yeah. I finished Young Justice, so we'll probably have an episode about that soon.
We should. We need to hit up that in Smallville here very soon.
Uh-huh. But anyway. So, first piece of news is kind of sad news. Well, not even kind of sad, just ridiculously sad. Sam Glanzman has passed away at age 92, and most don't know who he is, but Sam was one of the early geniuses of the comic book industry. He was really ahead of his time. Never gotten his due, not really. But if you go back and you look at his artwork, it was nuanced, it was dynamic, really decades ahead of his time, if you ask me. He worked for Charlton Comics. He did several war titles, including The Lonely War of Willie Schultz, and he also did notably Hercules and Tarzan, amongst other things. At DC Comics, he continued to work on war stories, including Haunted Tank and Sergeant Rock. He's also touched Jonah Hex, as well as a ton of stuff over there. He also did the autobiographical USS Stevens stories, which were in DC and Marvel Comics. Now, Indie Comics artist Drew Ford set up a GoFundMe page to help Glanzman's family pay for his hospice care, but he did confirm, he says, it is my sad duty to inform you that on Wednesday, July 12th at 2:30 a.m., Sam Glanzman passed away. No other information is available at this time. I will be following up with information about the funeral shortly. In lieu of sending cards and flowers, his wife, Sue, asks that you instead contribute to the GoFundMe page we currently have running. Now, that will also be helping pay for a tribute book. Drew Ford is actually putting all of his projects on hold because his wife asked him to put together the tribute book.
Gotcha.
If you would like to contribute in any way, you can go. You can email drewfordcomics@gmail.com with the subject line in all caps, Sam Glanzman tribute, last name, first name. And it's pretty sad. He's a really good artist. He was around back in the early 50s. But Ford says Sam wouldn't want us walking around feeling bad about how things are. The tribute book is being put together to celebrate his life and accomplishments. He would want us to think of him and his stories and smile. Stan Lee said Sam Glanzman is one of the most neglected stars. It's a shame that a talent like this has been so overlooked when writing about those who made comic books the exciting medium they are. So, yeah.
It's kind of a problem that a lot of creatives are having these days. It's such a freelance style that you don't have. You're kind of relying on yourself to develop a medical and retirement plan, and it's hard to do. So I could definitely see was it Kickstarter or GoFundMe?
It was a GoFundMe, and we'll put up a link to the GoFundMe page in the show notes. Moving on over to Wonder Woman. It is now the second highest grossing DCEU film behind Batman v Superman. Domestically, it is up to $380.6 million, foreign $385.3 million, worldwide $765.9
million. Wow.
Yeah.
That's something.
THR, the Hollywood Reporter, is reporting that it is holding up better than any superhero movie in the last 15 years.
As far as the legs?
Yeah. It's about to pass Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which made $385.8 million in North America.
Yeah. 1 and 2 did spectacularly as far as hanging in there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Still making money in Week 8 and stuff like that.
Now, as per the Hollywood Reporter article verbatim, that also means Wonder Woman will earn roughly 3.8 times the $103.3 million it collected when it launched over the June 2nd to 4th weekend, the best multiple for the genre in decades. Currently, the film's multiple is 3.6, slightly ahead of the first Spider-Man in 2002. The first Guardians of the Galaxy in 2014 was also a word-of-mouth sensation, sporting a 3.5 multiple, while Chris Nolan's Batman sequel, The Dark Knight, powered to a 3.4 multiple.
That's so yeah, impressive company.
And a 2.5 to 3 is considered a win for the superhero film, they claim. So
I can see that.
Warner's Jeff Goldstein, president of domestic distribution, says it feels like Wonder Woman will play all the way through August. Right now, the movie is still in about 3,000 locations. Usually the theater count would be a fraction of that at this point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. That is an impressive resume so far.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Deadpool responded to Wonder Woman surpassing him in the box office. It was a picture of Deadpool wearing a Wonder Woman necklace and making a heart with his hands around it. And it says, the Merc may be filthier, but her BO is stronger.
Yeah, yeah. His Deadpool's social media is just on point all the way around.
Oh, always. So Linda Carter was talking to People, said, we were trying to get me in the first Wonder Woman, and we couldn't make it work with our timing. She's already talking about being in the sequel. She says it really is up to Patty, and if it works in an organic way, it'll be great fun, and it'll be wonderful to do. Am I open to it? Absolutely.
Yeah, it really has to be organic. I don't want to be pulled out of a deep story here just for a cameo.
Yeah, I don't either. I adore Patty Jenkins. It'll be wonderful to do, but we'll just see how that goes.
Yeah.
Now, last week we did talk about the Wonder Woman Soviet Union rumors. The Wrap is now reporting that those rumors are true from their sources. So it's another outlet saying that's what's happening. I wouldn't be surprised if we got... I know Josh McKay talked to us about this on Facebook. And I wouldn't be surprised if Wonder Woman 2 was announced at Comic-Con.
No, not at all. That almost seems... It's bordering on inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. So, over to Justice League news. There are new International Justice League TV spots.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and talk about the Wonder Woman. We see a shot of Wonder Woman in that museum. What is that? What museum is that? Is that the Louvre? Is that what that was?
I don't know.
I don't remember
now. I really don't know.
Wonder Woman in a hangar bay. Not a whole lot of new stuff on any of these, really.
Yeah, collectively, the new stuff is, I don't know, what, 13 seconds out of all five
characters? Yeah, maybe. For Batman, there's Bruce Wayne looking pensive with his beard.
Yeah.
You know, a quick shot of Gordon standing on the GCPD rooftop with lightning.
Yeah.
Batman standing on that skeleton sculpture, but just this time in motion.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a close-up on the Flash suit on a mannequin. There are little extensions of a couple of shots that we've already seen, plus Barry acting like he's like meditating, doing some kind of Zen stuff. Really, the only new thing for Aquaman is Batman tossing him a trident.
Yeah. That was actually maybe my favorite piece out of these, what, I don't know, 12 seconds? I'm still...
Yeah.
I'm even peering down as I think about it.
Yeah.
It was nice to see a couple of new things, but...
Mm-hmm. I'll say this, and I feel really bad about this. I don't want to feel this way. The Cyborg stuff looks awful. Just the more I see of Cyborg in motion, the worse his suit, the worse his body looks to me.
I do hear what you're saying. The only defense I have yet, as of now, is I just didn't see it in high enough quality to care. I mean, when I watched this thing, it was barely HD quality. I don't want to make a judgment quite yet. It might surprise me, but I could definitely get behind you.
Yeah. I mean, we see the same old shot of him walking in his Letterman jacket. Then we see Cyborg in a cloak and hood, which his body was covered, so that was the best I've seen him.
Yeah.
Cyborg gearing up his weapons.
Really, the strongest point you could possibly make is the best CGI in the film so far as Cyborg is concerned, is when he's walking around in a hoodie, without any metallic parts.
So we've got Cyborg gearing up his weapons, which looks really bad to me, and Cyborg shooting falling debris. Honestly, I mean, I know what they did. I know they've said it over and over again. They've had pictures like he was in a mocap suit. So all of that is CGI.
Yeah.
I just I don't understand.
Is there a part of you that kind of is remembering like the Doomsday BVS trailer where you saw that power shot of the trio and thought, oh man, I've wanted to see that on screen for a long time, but it looks like hell.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, mostly I'm thinking, guys, not to pull the obvious card here, but Jon Favreau couldn't tell the difference between the practical and the CGI effects in Iron Man 10 years ago. Are you seriously showing me what looks like a gummy bear suit for a cyborg? This thing looks awful.
I'm not sure it's... I'm not watching it in high enough quality on my end to judge it that well. But
mm-hmm.
I will be on opening... Like, when it opens in November, I sure as hell will be there in a theater ready to judge it at the quality that is available to me. And from me and my computer and YouTube videos, it looks okay. But watching it that night, I've already seen enough to be a little worried too.
I've seen a lot of DCEU fans on Twitter, you know, complaining about like, people keep saying it looks like a Transformer, but it looks awesome. Guys, come on, it doesn't even look like a Transformer. Transformers look actually pretty cool. I mean, those when they're standing still, that's the best part of any of those movies, because the Transformer movies suck. I wish Cyborg looked as good as that. Right now, he's not cutting it for me. I don't know. I just don't understand how they're not. I don't get it. But whatever. Whatever.
Yeah. The only thing I can say definitively about it, one and a half things. The half is it's still in post.
Not this part. It isn't. Once they do, like we actually even covered this, man. When they were talking to the people who were doing the effects for these things, they say they hurry up and they get the orders for what has to be in the new trailers, and they hurry up and get those finished. So those are done.
Yeah, but finished. I think we talked about this part too. Finished is still a variable. If there's enough backlash, they'll come back and do some things. They just
I don't
will.
Think there's enough.
I mean, if something looks shitty enough, they'll have no choice but to. And it's not even the people making the thing. It's the executives in charge of giving notes that will do this thing. Somebody will say, somebody in marketing at least will say, we've gotten too much flack about this. You've got to go back and do it. And throw another, $100,000 at the film just saying, like, you've got to fix these shots. I'm sorry. It's getting terrible reviews. It's going to take people out.
They didn't with any of the BVS stuff.
I know. But again, one of the trends we're seeing is that BVS, for better or worse, it taught a lot of people involved a lot of lessons.
Well, look, a lot of people have been complaining about the cyborg look since they first started dropping trailers.
Yeah.
And they've done nothing to change that. So I don't believe they will change anything.
Yeah. I mean, if you really told me to flip a coin, I'd say don't bother. I don't think they will either. But
he doesn't even look like he's there. Ray Fisher doesn't. He looks like he's a floating face on a CGI body.
It hasn't looked that bad to me yet, but it could. It very well could. I'm not willing to like disagree with you. I just
final thought on it. It looks worse than the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern.
Ooh, I do remember that trailer, and yeah, you're probably right on at least this stage of it.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Entertainment Weekly posted a new picture of the Justice League, Batman, Flash, and Wonder Woman standing together looking off to their right. That's about all there is to that. But Ezra Miller said, for his character, he says he's this really endearing, altruistic nerd. He's the 13-year-old Metallica fan, and Metallica says, we lost our drummer in a freak accident. We need you to play drums, bro. And he says, I don't even have drumsticks.
That's pretty funny. it's gotta be I've had this fantasy at a concert before. Like pre-gaming, like driving to it thinking, oh man, I could play so many of these songs. Or even I've had bands that I went to where I thought I could play literally every single song if something happened. And you have this just ridiculous fantasy that like, what if I just had to play a song suddenly? Maybe I'm the guy they pull out of the crowd. Hey, can anyone play this? I feel comfortable in my embarrassment knowing that I'm not going to be the only person who's ever thought that going to a concert. Like, oh, wouldn't it be fucking amazing if they pulled me up and said, hey, can you play this?
Well, I've had that fantasy, but even in my fantasy, I know that I could pretend to play harmonica into a 6-inch sub, and that's about it.
Yeah, still pretty embarrassing, but it is what it is. In high school, it was I think I saw Stone Temple Pilots 3 times in high school.
Yeah.
And every time I thought, I can play every single thing. Just let me off. Let me go. Let's do this. But yeah, I can't be the only one who thought that. So yeah, Ezra Miller's take on it is, as so many things he has said are, endearing.
Mm-hmm. So the internet was freaking out today. Zack Snyder changed his profile picture and his cover photo on his Twitter account. That coincided with his latest tweet, the first since he left the project. The world has lost a master. Thank you for the inspiration. You changed my life with your art. You will be missed. Hashtag George Romero. George Romero passed away. He was the father of the modern zombie movie, Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead, which Zach actually did a remake of Dawn of the Dead. So, and he also worked on DC Comics Toe Tags. So, it's a little George Romero news.
Okay. But I don't know him that well, but I do know I have him to thank ultimately for Shaun of the Dead, and that makes me
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I have to be cognizant of that at least.
I mean, you really, if you've ever enjoyed Walking Dead, or hell, even segments of big great swaths of Buffy,
yeah,
and True Blood, he kind of defined the horror genre in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I haven't seen it in detail, but I do know when a couple people have mentioned him and products that I do know in detail. So
mm-hmm. Which is how it works with the greats.
Yep. You have to hope you're mentioned later. That's how you're really doing it.
Yeah.
You see the generation below you go, oh man, I watch this guy's films, and go.
I guess we should pop back from George Romero and talk about Zach removing his Justice League logo and cover photo.
Sure.
He's not working on the film anymore, guys.
Mm-hmm.
They've already said that.
Yeah. I mean, it's Whedon's film at this point.
That's not to say that Whedon's not going to stick to, Zach's vision or whatever, but...
He said exactly that he is going to stick to that vision, but...
Yeah, but they've also said that Joss Whedon is going to carry the film on through post.
Mm-hmm.
So, that means that Zack Snyder is not working on the film anymore, guys.
I mean, yeah. It, what are you going to do, blame him? He's got way bigger problems.
Yeah, so, calm the hell down.
Yeah.
Instead, getting... You know what? No, don't calm down. Just get excited about this next thing.
Oh, good. That's good, too. Because him... I almost want to know where he is with his life right now, in certain ways. I mean, he's going through a lot, and he's finally going to, deal with it, and it's been... What has it been, 6 weeks, maybe, since he announced he was going to deal with it?
Something like
six
that.
Six to eight? Yeah. I'm just guessing. I'd have to go back, but... Yeah, a couple months, maybe. That he was going back to just deal with his family. Whatever you see for the next, I don't even know how long, with what he's going through, just, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hold it against him.
So Chris McKay was talking, he said on Twitter that, and now this is the Nightwing director, you'll remember.
Mm-hmm.
He did the Batman, Lego Batman movie.
Sure.
He said on Twitter that he was going to get a Nightwing tat to go with his Catwoman tat. And Amanda at Cassandra Kane asked, "Do you love Nightwing that much?" And he says, "The story of Dick Grayson becoming Robin, then becoming Nightwing, played out for us, the audience, in the comics, in real time. It wasn't a flashback. We experienced it. So all of Robin/Nightwing's successes and failures, we were along for the ride. And people that underestimated Robin or dismissed him perhaps had their opinions changed as we watched him, quote, grow up right in front of us. His relationships, his conflicts with Batman et al. Felt real to me because he was the window character with which we experienced Gotham City." Jenny at Clark Joe's responded, "I hope the actor you cast loves him as much as you do." And Chris McKay says he has to. It has to be full commitment every day. It's going to be grueling from a martial arts, gymnastics, and stunt perspective. Also emotionally taxing. It's going to be real.
I love that setup. It's a great description, right? Too. And he's right. He's the comics often exist in this timeless kind of, I don't know, kind of a bubble, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. Like, Grayson grew up over a few decades.
Yeah.
And it's still kind of going in a lot of contexts. Like, yeah. Oh, that's a really good take on it. I like where he's heading.
Yeah. The one thing that I didn't care for was the thing that he said he was... The Nightwing tat that he was going to get was the animated series logo, or from the new animated adventures. And I've never really liked that one. So I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried about that.
Okay, but if it's any comfort, it means that he's probably watched a lot of the animated stuff. And
I know.
Yeah.
There
might be a balance to that where you can forgive the graphic design.
So anyway... It's been said before, but it's been said again now. Aubrey Plaza of Parks and Rec, and most recently Legion, wants to play Catwoman. I really don't want her to. I just don't see her in that role at all.
Mm. I don't care about that as much as I care about everyone looking at that news and wondering what is Legion and watching it.
Right. Also, David Ayer left Scarface, the Scarface remake, but apparently, from what I can tell, he's still attached to the Gotham City Sirens movie. A lot of people were worried about that.
Yeah, that seems to be kind of that's what I've seen too. He's still around.
I just saw a tweet by him because I follow him on Twitter, and he said you can't do them all, and I was like, no. And I did not know I was that emotionally invested in him returning until I saw that tweet and went, oh, no. And then I looked into it and went, oh. Whew.
Nah, he's worth it.
So DC, Warner Brothers have released new scheduling updates for their movies. We've been asked by a few people, Jonathan Lynette and Eli Hernandez, about what we think that it could be, because they've released a February and a June 2020 release date. Now, they've also pushed this Jason Bateman, Rachel McAdams movie Game Night from Valentine's Day to March 2nd, 2018. They also have scheduled an untitled WB animation film. So I don't know what's going on. Like, untitled WB animation film 6/1/18, untitled WB event film 12/13/19, which I guess could theoretically be a DC film, but will probably be, I would assume, another, like, Harry Potter or whatever it is, the, what is it called, the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them series.
I think without the but yes.
Yeah. I would assume that would be the next, that or that thing right there, but,
WB DC has so many ongoing properties. It would just be hard to guess.
So they have an untitled DC film for June 14th, 2020, and one for February 14th, 2020, and June 5th, 2020. Now these things are constantly in flux. It is 2017. We've seen this thing shift around so many times since even BVS was announced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go to the Wikipedia for the DCEU, the next things they have up, the last one we actually legitimately know the release date on is Aquaman,
mm-hmm.
which is like, I think, December 21st, 2018. But then, you know, you go to the Wikipedia page, they have Shazam listed for 2019, Cyborg for 2020, Green Lantern Corps for 2020, which I would assume were still those two for the 2020 slots.
I think those are still your most likely different. That's probably it. Really, that's probably.
But we've, you know,
because they're already going to be established, and we know we know they want to do Green Lantern,
mm-hmm.
even if it's not established.
But we have this Justice League Dark film. We don't know when that's coming. The Flash.
Yeah.
I would assume Justice League 2. We have the Batman. We have Man of Steel 2. We have Suicide Squad 2. We have Gotham City Sirens and a Black Adam film at least. So who knows when all these things are coming out.
The Black Adam and the Shazam films are the one thing that I kind of wonder about, because there's a part of me that thinks Dwayne Johnson wasn't kidding about this presidency thing. And we'll know inside the next year, like, if he starts campaigning. And there was a small report that he had mm-hmm. actually registered as an independent. And if that's true,
yeah.
It's really going to take him out. Like, there's no way you can, like, release a film, especially where you're the bad guy. you can't release that film and then come out. If that's all true, that's gonna reset a little bit of the what was gonna happen in the films.
Yeah. By the way, there were more movies on the next page. Untitled Nightwing film, a Batgirl film, Wonder Woman 2. There's a lot of movies that they can play around with here. I think there's a reason those slots are untitled.
It's what I would call a liquid slate right now. Like, we can only guess at what might be around that time. But still, I would feel pretty good about betting on Cyborg and Green Lantern around that time.
By the way, did you see that they announced, I think, for 2019, Green Lantern Earth 1 in the comics?
Yeah.
They wound up taking some stuff from Batman Earth 1 in the book. So, and they're actually actively changing Hal Jordan's storyline. Like, he's an astronaut in this thing. And, like, if I read it correctly, the Green Lantern Corps has been killed. And he finds a ring and starts to rebuild the Corps himself. So there, it looks like it's going to actually be a little different, and that actually might play into how they do the movie.
Oh, at this stage, it easily could. I mean, for Green Lantern, it seems like they're trying to figure out how to include him. But I mean, that one treatment aside, they could still go anywhere from that. I mean, this is a universe where you realize we covered, what is it, maybe 8 months ago, Ben Affleck wrote the script for Batman, and then now we're covering, like, Matt Reeves threw away the script for Batman.
Yeah.
These things change.
Yeah, they do. So, Suicide Squad, I'm going to screw up this name. Director of Photography, Roman Vazianov?
Feels Russianish. I don't know.
Yeah, posted a picture of a deleted scene, or a couple of deleted scenes, one with Jared Leto as the Joker in his tuxedo with his, like, the soot and debris on half of his face. He looks pretty sad. Also, some pictures, it looks like two women, it looks like twins, and they're all, like, painted gold, and they have Batman masks on. Apparently, a couple of dancers from Joker's Club. He's apparently put up a lot of pictures from his Instagram page. So there's that to go check out, and it's really gotten a few fans hyped up and trying to get a Joker cut released, and I don't want that at all.
I mean,
but
I'd watch it. More to do with like Blade Runner, whatever year they're focusing on, like 2049 or something. I don't remember. I'm sorry. They just released a trailer though, where like Jared Leto's creepy as hell, so that it might just be on the back of that a little bit.
Yeah, probably, but I thought you were making a completely different Blade Runner reference. I thought you were saying, like, it's just like how Blade Runner has so many of these, like, has so many cuts out there. Screw that, just give me the one cut.
Yeah, I really wish director meant what the word means, you know. You give this guy X amount of money, like, it's the I wish, like so many people do, especially comedians that are trying to start a show, like the Louis deal, you know, where like, here's X amount of money. If this goes badly, we just stop giving you that amount of money, but we're going to give you this and you make a show, and then whatever you don't spend, you keep.
Right.
How much do you wish some movies work that way? Like, it's not a matter of this entanglement between the studio and the creative types. It's just, yeah, man, do what you do. We got your back. And if it doesn't make money, we'll talk about it later.
You know, I think I'm more along the line. I stuck up for Marvel in the Edgar Wright Marvel debacle with Ant-Man, which is crazy because I love Edgar Wright. But you know what? I don't need some auteur director screwing up the vision for the universe. I prefer someone like a Jeff Johns in charge, who's like pushing.
Well, in that case, you sided with like Feige versus Edgar Wright. Like he did want to do some new things, and they might have worked out. We're not sure, but they're working with a very specific thing over in Marvel. And
yeah,
if you're going to compromise that thing, I mean, God, I love Edgar Wright to death, but it's a very specific vision that has like this grand potential. And that shouldn't be sacrificed for, you know, an Ant-Man film.
Yeah, and I'll, you know, going forward, like, I feel like Justice League is the final the final bit of the Snyder directed universe, and I feel like after Justice League, it's going to be a Geoff Johns, John Berg situation. So,
oh, absolutely.
I'm way more interested to see what happens post Justice League.
Kind of the phase two. They haven't used the word phase, as far as I know.
No, and you know what? As much as I like Zack Snyder, I look forward to the. I look forward to some of this being put aside so we could stop, like, hounding on Zack Snyder, either positively or negatively, and just get on with the DCEU in general.
Get on with the characters being developed and the that reality being built. Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of... There's a part of me that thinks that we're going to look back and think, oh, man. And this is maybe just hopes. But there's a part of me that... What if we just look back at it all and think, oh, man, I'm glad they spent so much time developing kind of the chaos of these characters before we dug in and made it this universe. Because it would set them apart from Marvel. Like, Marvel built these characters, but they built them in... It was a pretty tried-and-true form when it came down to it. It's kind of the, you know, the hero's journey or the save the cat in certain places. It's very straightforward. They didn't take as many chances as DC has, by any stretch.
No.
It'd be nice to see that pay off, at least retroactively.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, the Hollywood Reporter is saying that Amé Colette Sarah, who directed The Shallows, has now emerged as the frontrunner to direct Suicide Squad 2. And they're also saying that they're looking to a mid-2018 start on production. Mel Gibson has apparently obviously moved away from the project, or, you know, I don't know what happened with that exactly. I'm not sad about that. So
yeah, I'll survive.
But they did say that they have a new treatment by Zach Penn, who wrote the Avengers and Ready Player One.
Uh-huh.
So. But the new script will now be written. So
yeah, the funny part is though, like, new treatment means there are three single space pages.
Uh huh. Boom, boom, boom. Let's move along to. There actually might be a Colette Sarah might not do it because he's doing a TV drama called Waco, so that might be a problem. Moving on over to the Batman.
That's funny though. I watched that 20 years ago.
Yeah. The real thing, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was, I think it was called Waco, straight up, and it was like a TV drama that they did. It was like a TV miniseries.
Oh, yeah, most likely. So, you talked about this earlier, the Batman is starting over, which you could tell based on what he was saying before. He kept saying, we haven't started yet, which means that there is no script in my head.
Right.
But whatever. Everyone's freaking out now because Reeves actually told MTV, Matt Reeves told MTV that it was for real starting over. He says, it's a new story, it's starting again. I'm very excited about it. Now, Variety, though, claims that they are looking to put the movie out in 2019.
Feels about right. That. I mean, we're only a year and a half away from 2019 at this point.
Yeah. Now, this is pretty interesting, though. Matt Reeves was talking to UpRocks, and he says, when I come in, what I say is, look, first of all, you're asking me if I'm interested in this franchise. I am. I love this franchise. I've loved it since I was a kid. But here's the way in which I'm interested in it. And if you're not interested in it that way, then that's totally fine. And the good news was, they said, yeah, we're really interested in that way. And I remember this on Dawn, too. There would be moments where I came in for a pitch that was a certain version of the movie, and somewhere along the way, because they didn't know me or whatever it was, they'd say, why don't we do this? And I would just simply say, but that's not the movie that we talked about. That's not the movie I want to do. And I have to say that they always backed down when it came down to that. And it's kind of the way that I've always done it. And here's the thing. I'm always happy not to do something. I'm usually looking for the reason to say no.
You gotta like that set of testicles. That's pretty solid.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know what his take on Batman is, but I can at least respect if he stands by it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what that. I've heard, I like what he said. He says noir, he said detective,
yeah.
He said, Hitchcockian.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have some listener feedback. First up, we have a voicemail from J. Scott St. Clair, and I'm going to play that now.
What's happening, DC on Screen? Longtime listener, first-time caller, J. Scott St. Clair here. First off, just want to tell you how much I enjoy the podcast and look forward to it each week. You guys have a great format, and I appreciate all the time and energy that goes into the show. Okay, now that the flattery is out of the way, I'll pose a question. We all know that Batman has what is arguably the best rogues gallery out there. And what's so great about his villains is that each mirrors a facet of his personality. So, excluding the Joker, who's your favorite Batman villain and why? For me, it's tough to choose, but I gotta go with Scarecrow. I just love the fact that he taps into the fear that Batman instills into his own enemies and criminals. So I'd be curious to hear what your thoughts are. Keep up the great work. Thanks, guys.
All right, man. Thank you. Thank you so much for the kind words.
Yeah, thank
you
so much.
Glad you look forward. Glad you look forward to the show each week. And by the way, J. Scott St. Clair, he's a common liker and engager on social media. So really do enjoy, and I appreciate everything, man.
Hell yeah. No, it's enough to go to sleep some nights.
Do what?
It's enough to actually go to sleep some nights. That sounds like some exaggeration, but no. This brings me hope and joy.
Oh, okay. Well. That's good, man.
That's all I have.
I just take my melatonin to go to sleep, man.
I just lie there hoping someone cares.
Now you asked who our favorite non-Joker Batman villain is. Personally, I'm gonna say it depends on the origin. Like, I'll just as a default, I'll go with the animated series origins. As in my opinion, it's the best iteration of those characters.
Sure.
Given that criteria, I'd say probably Two-Face or Poison Ivy or Harley Quinn, and I can't choose between those three. Also, really love the TAS version of the Riddler. Not so much the New Adventures Riddler, but we only really saw him like the once. But
yeah.
Like the proper Riddler from the animated series was one
with
of
the
my
Minotaur
favorites.
And everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. What do you say, Scarecrow? I figure you say Scarecrow.
Yeah, I really got to side with him. Like. Outright. First of all, I completely agree with his point about the reason the Rogues Gallery is so good for Batman is Batman is such a human and relatable character, and a lot of his villains just reflect some side of him that you can relate to him in so many ways. I mean, you can almost go through the list, like Penguin. He is a rich guy too. He could have gone that way, like Ra's, or Ra's, well, if you want to. But Ra's al Ghul, he is though this. He's this guy who is kind of a chosen one in a way. I mean, he grew up. Mm. Like, he could have been just the next in the Wayne Industries Enterprise, you know. But he has this chosen one aspect, like Catwoman. He's got this burglar side to him. Mad Hatter, he's got this. Mad Hatter, and Hugo Strange in particular, he's got so much psychological training that I really respect the way they, in so many instances, portray Batman as being a psychological warrior before he ever has to actually punch somebody sometimes.
Mm.
He isn't necessarily punch first. He is intimidation first and mind games first. And that being said, like, you go over to Riddler, and Riddler is all about mind games. And there's a part of like that, and the world's greatest detective that's being tested constantly. And there's always the Joker who's just throws all of that out the window and just says, "What if I just fucked with you?" And that's all gorgeous. But yeah, I gotta agree with him, man. He's right on point to me personally. Like what resonates for me, Scarecrow. He's mm-hmm. the most untapped and my favorite villain of the Batman canon is just this guy just represents fear incarnate, not because he is himself fearful, but because he is also obsessed with fear, and so is Bruce Wayne.
Yeah,
like, there was that moment where he was afraid in his childhood, and then that has manifested itself
in so many ways.
See, my favorite thing about the and you know, thinking about it here, I'm gonna lean into Two-Face if we're doing the animated series versions, because
good version. Really good version.
Well, I mean, even to the understated elements of Two-Face, yeah, we had the whole thing with Grace and his alternate personality, mm-hmm. but one of my favorite things about the animated series version of Two-Face, which I don't think we've seen anywhere else, really,
the judge, I think, is
oh,
theirs.
Gosh, yeah. But going back, Harvey and Bruce are, like, best friends.
Yeah.
But I love that they both have this dark side of them that they hide from each other. Bruce being Batman and Harvey having big, bad Harv. Yeah.
It's one of the unexplored aspects of Gotham that I thought they were really going to be taking on, and there's so much more they could do.
They haven't. But they also have, they both choose public service. They both care about the city. They both care about justice. But Harvey's darkness consumes him, and Bruce has to just kind of, it consumes him as well.
It absolutely does. I mean, he goes out and breaks bones on a nightly basis.
Oh, absolutely. But he also has to, pull back to not become Harvey.
Yeah.
And especially when you consider...
And he could. You got to realize, Bruce, if he decided, would be Gotham's greatest enemy, you know?
Yeah. But in holding back and not letting the darkness that is Batman completely consume him, Bruce exercises an extreme amount of control. Harvey has given up control and leaves everything to chance. Mm-hmm. I love the dichotomy of all of that.
Oh, that's fantastic.
All of that is
yeah.
gorgeous. And I say, probably throughout the series, the thing that I hoped for the most was that they would have, some sort of wrap up that showed that, Bruce was finally able to cure Harvey in some capacity, but I don't remember anything like that aside from the judge.
Yeah, no, it
which didn't do that at all.
No. No, and
so yeah,
and
I guess I'll say
Two-Face. I kind of like it being that way. That it's so different. And again, there's you can pick certain characters, like even Catwoman, who is apparently now very much not an enemy.
Yeah.
There's this
maybe she's more of an enemy.
Yeah. Yeah. They may be building that in, but we'll see where the books take it.
I don't know.
But she's definitely you could see them, if they were friends in a heist, really getting off on the fact that they could get inside a bank vault and no one noticed, mm-hmm. there's something that you can use Batman to identify with almost any. I mean, there's a lot of bad villains in anybody's canon, but the major guys, and this is why his rogues gallery is so phenomenal, really probably the best, is you can use him to identify with anybody in his rogues gallery, and that makes the story so much richer. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Also, I just have to agree with him. I so much love the fact that Scarecrow is when done correctly, he's is it Over the Edge? Am I remembering that title correctly?
Yeah.
Just so much an agent of fear. And
yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. I Jay has it right on the head for me personally.
Mm-hmm. All right, so over on iTunes, Joseph Gordon left us a review. He says, a unique DC podcast. This podcast is one of the most unique and different DC-related podcasts I've listened to. Dave and Jason are two really funny guys who are passionate about all things DC while still remaining critical about what the company can do to improve itself. I like listening to differing opinions, and even though at times I don't agree with them, I'm always open to hearing different takes on the DC news. My favorite episodes were when they talked about the DC films that never got made, which got... so many people say that. Which got me both intrigued.
Weird favorites.
Yeah, which both got me really... got me both intrigued and relieved at the same time. Overall, this is a really good podcast to listen to, and you won't regret listening to it. Thanks for your hard work on the podcast and delivering regular weekly content for us all. Dude, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm glad that... glad you enjoy that... those three episodes.
They were...
yeah, they're
really
fun
episodes to talk about, man. I like My favorite part of it was, like, I had almost no idea what you were talking about in a lot of those.
Yeah.
It
was fun.
One of the hardest laughs I've ever had in my life was you describing Adam West's version of a Batman movie. Uh-huh.
Like, I specifically would not let you see the show notes for that episode. Yeah.
Like, howling, crying laughter. It's one of the hardest laughs I've had in my life.
Yeah. So anyway, Charles McFall, epic boss Charles McFall of the Giant Size Team Up Network.
The Rock God of Podcasting.
Of which, the Rock God of Podcasting. Self-proclaimed, though.
I'm willing to give it to him until further notice.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not even sure what that means.
I don't either. That's kind of that's a good reason to just be like, yeah, man, go.
Sounds impressive
we'll
as hell.
We'll pull you back if we need to.
Yeah. It says, you guys are still the prettiest and most beloved of the GSTU. Don't tell the other hosts. I'm pretty sure the other hosts know.
Also, can't possibly be true.
I don't know, man. Every time Charles does like a live feed or posts anything, like the other hosts are just like ragging him about how much he loves DC on screen and how we're like paying him to agree with us. Which I would never do that.
We can't afford to. That much is public record. But but I
my thought is to what end?
I mean, how much can we afford to put in that bag? I don't know. I don't know. I do love the guy and his enthusiasm. Is
absolutely.
I'm grateful for that minimally. And of my many conversations with the guy, fantastic to talk to. He's you know those guys you run into that are just kind of hopeful for reasons that you can't completely justify?
About what?
Kind of anything in general? Yeah, like in a way where like I'm so cynical sometimes, and then I run into a guy like Charles, sure. I'm like, I want to be on his level of just like, do it, and it's gonna be fine. Just do it, and I on some level I get it, but it's I need people like him around to kind of inspire me in a way to
I feel like I'm somewhere in between the two of you,
because I will absolutely shit on an idea without having any hope. I will absolutely fail any optimist in the general vicinity.
Yeah, and on my better days, I'm like, no, Jason, you're not doing that. No.
Yeah.
Charles, like, on every day, will just be like, oh, you're full of shit. We got to do this.
Yeah.
All right.
Very helpful person. I respect that. I do love that.
Yeah, Charles is a good guy. Charles is a good guy. And not because he just agrees with us all the time.
I'm sure he doesn't.
I'm sure he doesn't. I don't know. It's
become like a funny back and forth between us and the rest of this damn network, I've enjoyed it. I hope they have.
Yeah, it's fun. All right, so you know what you're not going to enjoy?
What?
This next comment.
Yay!
Even though, you know what? I love you, man. I love you, Nathan, at Wobbly Boots 85, but I don't know. This is... anyway, he says to us, how and where does Aquaman poop? Does he have a toilet? When he goes, does it immediately float to the surface? Do the fish eat it on his orders? What the hell, man? I don't even know how to answer this. I would assume magic. Atlantean sorcery. Just, they have like a little magic portal around their ass. I don't know.
No, I'm going to go one past that, and I'll keep it short, because why go into this? And I'm not qualified to, but I do know this.
You're not qualified.
I do know this part. One of the major sources of intake for some of the more grandiose whales is plankton, which is it's such a small species that it's almost barely worth mentioning, but it's a huge part of the ecosystem. So I don't think you have to talk anybody into this stuff. It's a series of things that. It's part of the food chain. It's almost like someone should put out like a waterproof book that says, we all poop, something like that. But that's a fact of life. There's always a kick down system, and it gets down to plankton. It's actually one of the funny parts about Mercury does not really Mercury doesn't go away. Is one of the fucked up parts about Mercury. So the more we get into the ecosystem, especially in the oceans, the more it kicks down and like we're eating it and such and such. And plankton is kind of the one of the things that can still keep it around on a just cellular level. And it's kicking back up in the system because like this tiny little thing that's a product of so many other mid-form things, I'll call them, including poop. That goes all the way down, and then these whales just open their mouth for like 3 miles and just see what wonders in there. It all works, and it's all circular, and it all makes like this cute little cycle of life. And then, bottom line is Aquaman's poop is okay.
There you have it. Jason says Aquaman is pooping in a whale's mouth.
Yeah, it takes a few kicks down, but yeah, that's roughly what's going to happen.
Randall Smith. Randall Smith sends us an
Everyone,
email.
By the way, feel free says, to write me on how I'm wrong on all that science. I'm perfectly willing to accept that immediately and then learn.
Mm-hmm. He is. Randall Smith emails us, says, "My girl hating, in quotes, 11-year-old son shocked me last weekend when he told me that he liked Wonder Woman better than Spider-Man Homecoming, though he considers Homecoming his favorite Marvel film. Anyway, how do you think a Huntress movie would do if she is somehow introduced in the upcoming Batman/Family DCEU movies? Doesn't look like she's returning to CW, even though she was a highlight of the rest of the first season of Arrow." I don't have confirmation that she's not coming back to Arrow, but I will say that I would love to see her in a movie. I'd love to see her in a Birds of Prey movie, Gotham City Sirens movie, what have you. My personal favorite Huntress version is the Helena Bertinelli.
Sure.
And I, you know, well, you say sure, like that's the only version, but it's not.
No, I mean, just my favorite too, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we're anywhere near having the Helena Wayne version, the Batman, Catwoman daughter.
No, but no need.
No need. We got to see it. That in the CW or WB. Well, not kids, WB. The you know, the WB
Your
back before it was the CW. Yeah. We saw that in Birds of Prey. It's on my shelf. I mean, we've seen Bat-Cat daughter. But I don't think they would do a solo Huntress movie. I think they're probably going to look at a more female-centric movie a lot closer because of Wonder Woman. But I think we'd probably see it in a Birds of Prey movie, or maybe even a Batgirl in the Birds of Prey movie, which I think all of that will probably happen either in Gotham City Sirens or in a follow-up to the Batgirl movie. Because they're trying to, you know, establish things.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to go with her, but I don't know if she's what they need right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't assume that she was. Maybe in an ensemble, but or a sequel
in an ensemble,
to an ensemble.
She could be
but
a great... she could even be a major, you know, story point where she's going too far and such and such. Like, same thing they did in Arrow to some extent. Like, did a pretty good version of the character in Arrow. She goes too far, even you know, Oliver, that version of Oliver, which is particularly dark. Even he tries to pull her back a little bit. Like, they did a pretty good job with her. And I kind of do wish they'd pull her back on Arrow, but they haven't really even mentioned it. It hasn't, just hasn't been on the table for a long time.
Yeah.
She would be good, but it's not the right time, at least, I think, in you know, the overall picture for her to carry a movie, at least.
No, yeah, I don't think she's there for carrying a movie.
I think she's there for a good B story.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe even a good audience window, but that's about it. Like,
even
I
then,
think
she's
going to
be kind of the sociopath in that group. Even more,
I mean, it just really depends.
I mean, even in Sirens, she's going to be kind of the one that, how to put it, she's going to be the human in Sirens. that you're going to immediately look at it and go, oh, I would never go that far.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, at least, anyway, you know, Poison Ivy or Harley Quinn, you they don't even register as human.
Mm-hmm.
Or Batgirl, at least, she is, but she's kind of this, you know, apex of humanity. But
yeah. All right. So that's going to do it for our DCEU episode. Now, we are going to do a Spider-Man stinger. And who knows how long that'll last, because we're going to review and get super spoilery on Spider-Man Homecoming. We've had a ton of people ask for it, so we're definitely going to do it. But if you don't want to hear about that, because this is a DC podcast, we're going to put it after the credits, so you can just skip ahead to the DC TV episode if you want to do that, or just not listen to that at all. But we are DC On Screen. You can find every episode at DCOnScreen.com. We're on Twitter, DC On Screen, Facebook, DC On Screen, Instagram, DC On Screen. It's a trend. It's a pattern.
It's almost like those words mean something.
It's a trend. It's a pattern. It's who we are. That's my bad Shatner. You can call us if you want to leave a voicemail, just like J. Scott St. Clair did this episode. You can call us at 205-259-6331. I'll say it again so you don't have to rewind. 205-259-6331.
Good to meet you, Jay, by the way.
He's a good man. And we'll put you on the show.
Got his head on straight. That's clear to me.
He does. I'll tell you this much, though. We put on the old Widder Woman, so you have a pretty good shot of getting on if you leave us a voicemail.
We've gone through that, it's pretty much you have 100% chance.
Right? Anywho.
Unless it's literally unusable.
Yeah, like if it's like, you know, 10 minutes of you know, hate speech or something.
Yeah, yeah.
No one will ever know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
If you filled up like a bullhorn with cotton swabs and Jell-O and left us a message, yeah, that's probably just nonsense. We can't use that.
All right.
Just trying to imagine anything that's completely unusable, and that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Other than that, you've got a pretty great chance.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, we're going to go ahead and dip out of here, and then we'll be right back right after the credits, still part of this episode, to talk about Spider-Man Homecoming. Until next time, guys, keep some DC on your screen. Welcome into episode 414's after credit stinger, where we're going to be talking and getting super spoilery on Spider-Man Homecoming. We know that this is a Marvel property, that's why it's in the stinger.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not doing an entire episode devoted to it. So a whole bunch of people asked us to do this, and I think it's just become like one of those things where we just have to do it now, because like a lot of our listeners are just like, please do the Marvel thing after the credits again.
I'm fine with that.
I am too. I like talking about this stuff. Yeah. I love superheroes, man. I'm not, like I said, I love both of them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we're not discriminating against, of all people, Spider-Man.
No. Love me some Spidey. And, you know, as I said on my own personal Twitter, at David C. Robertson, dude, Tom Holland did what Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield never could. He played Spider-Man. Like, this kid is Spider-Man. Like, he is the comic book rendition of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He's funny. He's nerdy. He's all the things I wanted out of a Spider-Man.
Yeah. No, he's this wonderfully insecure person who happens to also be a fucking superhero.
Mm-hmm.
This is easily the best version that has ever hit any screen.
Yeah. And, you know, people who are, you know, mad about Aunt May being hot Marissa Tomei, piss off. I've actually seen people complain about that. I don't understand that.
Different argument for another day. I don't know.
You know, Aunt May was always, like, my least favorite element of the Tobey Maguire movies. She was just kind of there for the others, but she was just always like giving these like grandiose speeches that kind of hinted that she knew that Spider-Man was Peter Parker. But
no, this movie did a wonderful job of nipping that all in the bud, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you remember the animated series and in the comics, she just hated Spider-Man. She just thought he was a piece of shit.
Yeah, there was this Jameson effect. that affected a lot of the characters that were involved in his universe. And that seems way less realistic than what they've done here, where he doesn't really have his, his social nemesis, I guess, quite yet. Mm-hmm. Might end up being that Flash dude.
Yeah.
That's definitely something to explore. But he definitely has, and it seems more realistic in a lot of ways. Like, he's some kid who grows up with his aunt, Uncle Ben's gone, whatever. That seems like a realistic relationship that him and Marissa Tomei have developed. And the last scene where she walks in with the what the,
Yes.
Just fantastic.
Cut to Blitzkrieg Bop, which was amazing. It was an amazing reference to the fact that the Ramones did a pretty amazing rendition of the old 60s Spider-Man theme to great acclaim.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed seeing the Ramones there in the end credits.
Yeah.
As
I've said before, that was one of my favorite parts of the score was using the 60s credits, or using the 60s theme
I absolutely love that.
It was
thank
fantastic.
You Michael Giacchino.
Yes.
But I love this rendition of Peter Parker. I loved his version of Spider-Man. I loved Ned Leeds being his best friend. That was new, but I think it worked. And that actor, I don't remember his name, but he was amazing.
He did a great job. And they built the role well, where even his role has its own character arc, where he's the guy in the chair, at some point.
Yeah.
And they didn't leave anything open with him. He is this wonderful emotional foil for Peter. Like, especially him at the party, like, you feel terrible for him, and he's in his hat, and the hat's going over well, but he's not,
I can't help if they're gonna push that into him becoming a supervillain, because in the comics, Ned Leeds became the Hobgoblin.
I don't think they have to in this case.
They don't have to. I'm not saying. I never said they had to.
No, absolutely not.
But why not?
They could. They absolutely could. But he does build so well into what they're doing. And one of my favorite little moments was later when he actually has the. I don't even know what you call it. What were they calling it in the film? The web shooters,
Uh-huh.
He gets the nice shot from Peter out in the parking lot. It's a really great scene. That character in particular has a wonderful arc, and he's hilarious.
He is. He's great.
He was a wonderful addition to the film.
Yeah. And I would love to keep him around and watch these characters as they grow. I would love to see Norman Osborn come in, Harry Osborn.
You want him to be like another kid who got beat at the prep, what's the name of the competition they were at? I'm sorry.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
It's not like what debate. I was in this
no,
when I was
it's
in,
not.
I was in high school or junior high actually.
Oh gosh. I don't remember what it's called now.
Here's
I'm
the fucked up part,
too.
Is I was in that thing, and now I'm blanking on the name of the actual thing. So, that's full circle. Trivia team, whatever. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry,
we're forgetting. Completely forgetting that.
You were in it, and I've seen so many Girl Meets World episodes where they were doing it. But I don't remember.
Aw.
Yeah.
Oh, I was really happy to see that actor, though, in charge of it. What's his name? Martin Short. I'm forgetting so many things now. It's been a couple weeks. I haven't really gotten to, I haven't gotten to think about Spider-Man since I saw him.
Are you talking about their coach?
Yeah, their coach. Was it Martin?
Martin Starr,
Martin Starr, that's it.
Yeah.
I have never seen him and not absolutely enjoyed the shit out of myself. It's never happened.
Well, yeah, and I've always, I enjoy seeing him. I know him from the Apatow stuff, Freaks and Geeks
absolutely.
And Undeclared. But, I was pretty happy that he was in there.
Party Down, even popping up a Community on, one episode, I was just so happy with him.
Yeah, and his he's a carryover from the Incredible Hulk movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just gone on to do this now, and that he's the same character they said. So
yeah,
that's what they claimed. I don't know. I
It's entirely possible they'd like just cast it, put it in, and went, "Oh shit!" It was no, that's intentional. We did that anyway.
I actually just to make sure I looked it up just a second ago, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe wiki has them as being different names, but I literally just read an article where they were saying that it was the same character. So I don't know. I don't remember Amadeus Cho being a name in The Incredible Hulk, but whatever.
That one's been a while. And let's face it, we all kind of consider that a tangential part of the universe.
A little bit. But yeah, so I pretty much, like, I don't necessarily, while I enjoyed Zendaya's character, I don't necessarily consider her to have been integral to the movie.
MJ?
Well, as she is apparently called, but they, you know, to be clear, Kevin Feige did come out and say that she is not Mary Jane Watson and never will be Mary Jane Watson. They just thought it was a fun little joke, and apparently people freaked out too much.
No. Yeah, I'm a little back and forth on that. Like, in the theater, I thought, oh, huh, okay. And afterward, when everyone freaked out, I thought, eh, calm the hell down. But
yeah.
Same thing, you can't bring up, you know, you can't use MJ in a spider film and not expect people to freak out. Like, that's either backpedaling or just really bad foresight.
Yeah, that one.
I don't know, the latter on that one.
You know, I understand that they didn't want to like really jump into Gwen Stacy. They didn't want to jump into Mary Jane. I want to see Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane. I want to see Gwen, like, one of my favorite, and, you know, I'm on record as liking Amazing Spider-Man 2 for the most part. One of the things I loved about that is they killed Gwen Stacy in that movie. Spoilers if you care to go back and watch that movie.
No, and but, used a very similar effect. Right? It was really well done, actually. One of my favorite scenes in all of the Spider-Man being on screen.
Yeah. So I would love to see Gwen Stacy come in. I would love to see her, you know, become a love of Peter's life and wind up getting shellacked by the Green Goblin or by Spider-Man's web, whichever way you fall on that side of the argument for the old school Spidey fans.
Sure.
Because, you know, there are a lot of people say that, like, oh, she wasn't dead yet. But when she fell and he grabbed her with his web, the momentum snapped her neck. So then he killed her. And, you know, there's always that. I mean, they did have that snap on onomatopoeia when he grabs her and you see her neck snap.
I mean, that's how the comic book plays out, is that him trying to save her killed her.
Well, was she... Well, they didn't. They never completely said. She may have been dead before. She may have been dead before...
it's possible. Goblin it, it's threw just her that, off. Like, when we he blames himself, there's no reason for him not to. And at least that is an interesting story arc.
Absolutely. So, anyway... loved Ned, loved Martin Starr. I loved Michael Keaton so much in this movie.
Oh, God. I feel like we could do 20 minutes of how he's amazing.
I really enjoy... I've never been a fan of the Vulture, ever, until now.
Never cared. Never. Yeah, the Vulture was... 0% of shits. And then he did it, and sure enough, 100% of shits.
Yeah. Always one of the most, boring... villains in the Spider-Man rogues gallery to me. And shit, man, Michael Keaton knocked it out of the park. He was great. I loved the idea of them screwing him out of his contracts and him just sort of changing the game and scavenging, yeah, being a Vulture and picking up all this alien tech.
All of the they weaved Stark into this so well. Mm-hmm. I thought we're like, yeah. Tony and I mean, come on, how long has it been now? Well, the better part of a decade.
9 years.
Yeah. Where RDJ has just been this character we've been following. And this was one of the, I don't know, most evocative things I felt like he's done. It was so much fun to watch him interact with this kid. And him get to like talk about his past a little bit, talk about his, you know, his relationship with his parents a little bit. Like they did so much to kind of flesh out and keep the Iron Man character alive in this weird world where he's like lifting up cities and like literally like helping lift up a city at some point.
Yeah.
And just to go back to this, where it's just him mentoring some kid, you know, it was so much fun to watch him do that. And oh my God, to think about him being on the same screen with Michael Keaton and them not actually being on screen with each other at any point feels criminal.
Yeah.
But it didn't hurt the movie at all. Like, Michael Keaton was fucking fantastic. It that scene where he intimidates, you know, where he realizes who Peter really is and intimidates him in the back seat is just pure gold.
Yeah. Fantastic. Like,
Tom Holland and him did, oh, man, they did a fantastic fucking job with that.
Now, that's the weak point of the movie, though. Not that scene in particular, but the fact that the conceit that the girl that Peter likes is the daughter of the Vulture. It's just, there's no real reason for it other than the plot needed it to be that way.
Well, they also didn't. It ended up being a nice turnaround. Like it ended up being a nice surprise. There was no reason for it not to be that way. They hadn't led you in a certain direction. They hadn't. They just.
Oh, no.
Excuse me. It just was what it was. They never told you it was going to be anything different. They didn't cheat you. They didn't lead you in a certain way. There was no foreshadowing. It just turned out to be that way, and it worked.
Well, it worked, but it was also horrendously convenient.
It was, but only if you look at it, in my opinion, only if you look at it in kind of the, yeah, if we had ordered this from a website and hoped for the best, yeah, it would have been too convenient, but...
What?
it's a little bit like having Amazon Prime and thinking, oh shit, that thing's worth $7 and I don't have to pay shipping?
Uh-huh.
But it really didn't draw me out at all. Like, watching it, it made sense.
Yeah.
And importantly, it didn't betray anything that had happened previous in the film. Right, previously in the film.
Well, it was just a huge coincidence, and
It made the movie, yeah, no doubt.
It made the movie a little weaker for me, but they were so fun playing together. I didn't really mind that much. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I was watching it, and I was, like, grinning from ear to ear, but still going, that's going to bother me later.
It didn't even weaken it for me. It really didn't. Like, they... The fun part was nothing relied on that as some stupid take. And also, they had this wonderful scene later where he has this gorgeous scene where he, Peter and God, I'm just going to say the Vulture. I can't remember his name right now.
Adrian Toomes.
Thank you. Are having this wonderful conversation about, hey, I thought you'd probably do this. It's this pretty stereotypical conversation among superhero films about, like, yeah, I thought you'd probably choose this route. So I'm kind of ready for you. And yeah, sure enough, he's ready for him. And Spider-Man spends a certain amount of time trapped under rubble. It was literally my only problem with the entire film was Spider-Man trapped under the rubble.
That was the biggest problem for you?
That was the biggest problem for me. I could have done without the voiceover.
What voiceover?
Shit, I'm trying to remember it now.
Was there a voiceover? There may have been. I remember him talking, but I kind of feel like it had to be there for the scene, if there was a voiceover.
It was the Tony voiceover. If you need the suit, you don't deserve it.
Oh, no, no, no. No, no, that was good, because that was the only thing we really had to mimic the scene. Like, that's from that shot, that scene is from Amazing Spider-Man 33.
Oh,
it was an old Steve Ditko thing, and like with him trapped underneath the rubble, and like the water coming down, and he's hearing voices in his head from like Aunt May and Uncle Ben, and different people in his life, and he like they help strengthen him to push past it. But they hadn't really set that up with them in this movie, and really all they had was the fact that he, you know, didn't feel like he wasn't worthy because he didn't have the suit to help him. So with Tony coming in and doing the voiceover, I was good with that. All of that was really cool. And I was really glad that they finally... Because that's an iconic scene in Spider-Man history. I was really glad they had that back... Or in a movie at some point. When it was funny when he was trying to save the fairy, and he's like throwing the webs out, and he starts to try to, he's like stretched, he's trying to pull.
Yeah.
Bethany leans over and goes, "Are they seriously doing this again?" And like Tony flies in, and I'm like, "Nope." He ain't earned that shit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a pretty iconic scene. So the voiceover was heavily needed. If anything, I think, you know, it made it maybe a little weaker that they didn't have all the backstory with May and Ben and all, but I felt like the Tony step in was fine there. And quite honestly, I don't need another Uncle Ben floating and saying, "With great power comes great responsibility."
No, that's fine. And they alluded to the word, you know, responsibility a few times and power a few times.
Yeah.
And that's great. I like how they kind of mentioned mm-hmm. the concepts a few times. But it did feel that was the one point in the entire movie where I kind of where he was laying there and it was the one point really where I kind of thought, yeah, you could have just shown that, not told. Like, I could have done without that voiceover.
I was good with it. And, you know, also he like looks down and he sees the image of himself with like the Spider-Man mask is laying there, and he sees like half of it, and then his own reflection and the other half. That was
for me.
Great.
If they just done the reflection of him with like him having that moment internally, and then not doing mm-hmm. the voiceover, because the voiceover actually drew me out in some fourth wall kind of aspect. If they just done
him
seeing himself that way in the water, I would have been perfectly happy with it. Seriously, in the entire film, that's my gripe. That's all I've got. Like, that's it. It was fucking fantastic. I enjoyed myself.
I don't have that. I just really have the convenience of Tombs being Liz's dad.
I'm fine with that. I'm good.
Well, that and Liz not being all that, you know? Because, let's face it, she wasn't all that.
I don't know what you mean.
Wow. She just didn't seem like all that to me. I don't know. She didn't seem that cool. Isn't that amazing? You know?
I don't know the context for that. I mean, she was one of the cool enough characters that she was the classic kind of slightly above it all high school cool kind of character, you know?
Yeah, which is probably why I don't think she's all that. I didn't feel like they really sketched her out enough to justify. But, you know, Peter's like 15.
Mm-hmm.
15-year-olds, you know, unabashedly love people they've never even met. Whatever. I don't consider it a real problem.
It is our nature.
loved the Vulture. Loved, you know what, that actress, though, she did a fantastic job when she's leaving and because they're moving out of state. She really did a fantastic job of being sad that she was leaving, / annoyed with Peter for not telling her the truth about things.
Yeah, she was solid.
The actress was solid. I just didn't care about the character as much as I should have.
I did still care. Because if nothing else, she drove Peter to make certain decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And did it well.
Yeah. So I read a lot of stuff. Like, people kept saying, I kept seeing headlines floating about saying that Flash Thompson wasn't going to be a bully. He was totally a dick. He was totally a bully in this movie. He just didn't beat the crap out of Peter. He was just
dick.
An asshole to him.
Yeah.
Like, he was a total bully.
Yeah.
He just didn't punch him or anything. don't expect Flash to be a bully in this version of Spider-Man. No, he was a complete dick.
They could not have drawn him as a worse character. He is, at some point, a self-aggrandizing coward. We're like, grab mm-hmm. my trophy! And then grab me to get out of the elevator, even though there are still people down here that probably need to be saved.
Yep.
I mean, he's, you know, he's a piece of shit. That's how the movie drew him out. And even, you know, past that, they took great joy in ruining his vehicle later in the movie.
Yes.
He's supposed to be a piece of shit in this movie. If that's not clear, you just missed it. That's mm-hmm. the reality of it.
I loved that they had damage control in this movie.
Oh, that was cool.
I love that he named his AI Karen. I loved everything with that AI.
Oh,
I loved the,
that was so good. Him being trapped.
Lethal mode or whatever it was. Yeah. Oh man! And like, Lethal Mode actually looked like a one of the Alex Ross designs. that he did years and years and years ago.
Actually, one of my favorite lines in the movie, sadly, being someone with ADHD problems myself, was him kind of saying later, like, okay, all right, we've gone through a lot. How long have we been here? It's like 26 minutes. Oh, God damn it.
That was great. And I knew where the punchline was. I knew where the joke was coming. I knew it was going to be like... I knew it was going to turn out to be like no time at all that he's been there.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah. Though, still.
But I enjoyed the hell out of it. I still related the fuck out of that line. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I did not like the movie as much as Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I will say that.
I agree. Guardians actively made me cry at a few points. I'm going to say better or worse, but I did enjoy it more. Yeah. I enjoy the experience of watching it more.
Yeah. I don't know. I think in certain ways I enjoyed it more than Wonder Woman, but only in certain ways. It was just a completely different beast.
Yeah, they all are. And you know the fun part is they're all we're 10 years into this genre.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to get their legs under them pretty thoroughly. We're getting to the point where you can really enjoy something for what it is and really enjoy it for reasons that you might not even like another movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's an exciting point. Just as a viewer, as part of the audience, this is an exciting time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I loved when Tombs just completely destroys the Shocker. And he goes, oh, I thought that was the gravity gun. Like, bullshit, man.
I like that over the shoulder. That one's supposed to kill him. Yeah, that was wonderful. God, yeah. Michael Keaton. That guy's just borderline flawless.
Mm-hmm. The listener we talked about earlier, J. Scott St. Clair, wrote us and said, looking forward to your Spider-Man review. Well, hope you've enjoyed it so far.
No.
Who are your top picks for the Avenger and villain to be featured in the sequel? Well, I don't think he needs an Avenger in a sequel. Especially since Kevin Feige has said that Spider-Man is going to be the premier superhero in the Marvel Universe, bringing us back into solo movies post the Infinity War. So my guess is a lot of Avengers are going to be dead.
Yep.
Did you see the thing at D23?
Yep.
Like Ruffalo said, you didn't see that? Someone asked something about Infinity War, and Mark Ruffalo just goes, well, everybody dies. And he goes, wait, what is that guy's name? I can never remember his name. The guy that plays Rhodey. What is his name?
Oh, Lord, if you hadn't asked me.
Anyway, he was like, dude, you can't do that. And he was like, can we just rewind that just a little bit? which, you know, I think that was all put on, honestly.
Mm.
I don't think everyone's going to die, but I think Peter has a good chance of being the next Tony Stark in the franchise. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're
have taken over.
The franchise is going to survive. And a lot of the characters will too. I did get to see a couple seconds of that just before everything was torn down. And, this is going to be a very big movie.
Uh-huh.
They're,
Infinity War, yeah. I watched all a guy
of the sons of or the children of Thanos. I mean, this is going to be a movie that, yeah. There's 10 years at this point worth of stakes involved.
Yeah, and there was a guy describing the footage he saw at D23 that I watched, and we were talking about Doctor Strange creating platforms for Star Wars to run across, and all sorts of crap that he was saying that I was just fantastic. What the hell? And he was like, there were so many images I couldn't even register them because it was all going by so quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, just, man.
Even that alone, think about where we are now. And I mean, we cover so much DC stuff, but think about where we are in Marvel as well. We're at a point where are we talking about Doctor Strange creating a platform over which Star-Lord will jump? And that's on screen, and they're spending, they're probably spending somewhere like, I don't know, $250 million minimum?
Yeah.
Just on this movie? I can't believe we're in this era. Yeah. This is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about Infinity War and all of that stuff. I'm down, man. I'm sure that you can find people who are willing to describe what's going on, what they saw in the footage. We'll probably see it more reports coming from San Diego Comic Con, I would imagine.
I think we're probably going to get like at least a teaser out of SDCC.
Yeah. But anyway, as for villain to be in the sequel for Spider-Man, I don't know about Avenger. It'd probably be kind of fun to see Ant-Man show up with him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. not that he needs one necessarily, but I would love to see... I really want to see Norman Osborn. I really want to see Harry Osborn. I want to, and you know what? I kind of want Harry Osborn to become faster friends with Peter, kind of push Ned out a little bit, and maybe Ned becomes the Hobgoblin because Harry became Green Goblin. You know, I don't.
Not bad at all. I'll take that.
Yeah. Like maybe that's what it takes to be your friend. Maybe you have to become a villain to get your attention, Peter. I don't know. I could see any of that happening. It'd be fun. I'd, you know, kind of like to see Mysterio. Kinda.
Sure.
Might be fun for exactly one movie. you know, there's not a huge amount of... You know what I'd really like to see? I'd like to see the Kingpin from Daredevil be Spider-Man's villain for a movie.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Because he fought Kingpin all the time in the cartoons.
Never gonna
happen.
And in
the books, really. Why?
I mean, yeah,
you don't know.
That would make a lot of sense for Spider-Man, but Netflix and the Marvel properties have not tread upon each other too many times. So, yeah, it's just probably not going
to
happen.
Maybe not, but, you know, there's nothing to say that it won't, really, honestly. I mean
yeah, there's nothing not lying at.
We've had Nick Fury in S.H.I.E.L.D. We've had, you know, Lady Sif in S.H.I.E.L.D. Sitwell was in S.H.I.E.L.D. and Captain America, Winter Soldier, and I'm about halfway through season 4 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they're using the same freaking bullets to try to assassinate Patriot that they used on Luke Cage, and Luke Cage, why not?
Mostly, D'Onofrio is too big.
D'Onofrio said he wants to do it.
He...
D'Onofrio actively said he wants to be in a Spider-Man movie.
I know, I just still...
What do you mean D'Onofrio's too big? He's too big, not too big to be on a Netflix series, but he's too big to be in a Spider-Man movie? Nah.
I would love it. I would really love it.
I'm not saying it will happen. I'm just saying I really want it to happen.
They've really got to commit to it, though. And I would love it if they did, though. I mean, seriously, do Spider-Man Homecoming, as we've seen. And then another one where they kind of address several villains, and then another one where it all culminates in D'Onofrio and early 2021. Oh my god, I would love that fucking movie. I would be willing to bet on that right now.
Yeah, and of course I want to see Gwen Stacy. I want to see Mary Jane. I want to see J. Jonah Jameson. I want to see all these people.
Absolutely.
So you know, but yeah, enjoyed the hell out of the film. Thought it was a lot of fun. And, I don't know. You got anything else?
No, really loved it. It still cracks me up as, I have never felt more crowded in a film on its opening night than I did that night.
It was pretty full when we went to go see it last Wednesday.
I mean, I literally just had to hunker down between two people.
Mm-hmm. I loved the coach, the gym coach, that was just like, pretty sure this guy's a war criminal now, but whatever. Mandatory that we show it.
Yeah.
Oh, Cap.
I gotta admit, though, it may be the funniest thing they've ever done in the Stingers was the patience dialogue.
Yeah, only like one person laughed in the theater. that was left. They were just like, one guy was like, ah.
But I had that experience at least a couple times. Like, I did that with, like, I laughed out loud and somebody else did. And for all I know, they were the same person. I don't fucking know. That and the Spider-Man, like, the 60s Spider-Man tribute, I'll call it, with the strings. Like, there are a couple moments where I kind of thought, oh, yeah, that's fantastic. And there a couple hundred people in the theater, and I still was kind of left alone on those moments.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know.
I don't know what to do. I still enjoyed it.
Yeah. There were a couple of shots that where it was just really clear that he was CGI, that Spider-Man was CGI. That took me out a little bit. But, yeah. It wasn't Cyborg bad.
We'll be okay.
Yeah. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up, I think. I can't think of anything else to really say about the movie. I enjoyed it.
Really enjoyed the shit out of that thing. And it was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we're going to be coming right back with a DC TV news episode. And it's probably going to be a pretty short one. So keep some DC on your screen.